Yesterday's 2-1 win over Brentford made it 5 wins in 8 at home for Reading FC, pushing them 4 points clear of the relegation zone to make us think there might finally be a return to Fortress Medeski. That is the subject of episode 192 of the Tylersen podcast with your host Mark Mayo, and joining me to discuss all things West Berkshire and the Royals is Dave Handbags Harris, not a man who knows more about Reading FC than the guy on the other end of the phone line tonight. How is it going, mate?
It's all right. That's quite a welcome. I'm not wouldn't quite go that far myself, but hey, I'll take it.
If there was a mastermind for Reading FC fans, I'd certainly put you on it. Let's put it that way. I'd be good on it if you could quiz me purely on the topic of Sean Cumming's exploits at Reading FC. I'd be absolutely golden. But anything else, as my years escape me, that might not do me too well.
Yeah, I could quite happily do phone a friend. If anyone ever goes on, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, I'm your man.
Yeah, they never on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. They never put football questions right at the end because they know that probably even the hardest football question, there's a decent portion of the population that can have a good go at it. But Reading season this year probably won't be featuring in too many pub quizzes in the years to come, because there's not really many records being broken, but it's all about survival at the moment, and Reading are having a decent fist of that, which we're going to discuss now in the recap.
The Tylehurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetylehurstend.com.
2-1 win at home for Reading once again then, and this was a case of the early blitz, which Jose Gomes' team are becoming quite adept at, really. 5 goals in the first 30 minutes of our last 4 games, which, you know, when you think about it, is certainly something that that is putting us on the right side of the scoreline. Our half-time stats pretty much put us up towards the top of the league, in fact, if games ended at half-time. But then towards the end of the game, you know, that's where we typically fall apart. But this time, we did all right, didn't we? It's that early blitz. Do you think that really is the key, ultimately, in terms of getting the win against Brentford? And teams, perhaps at the moment, we've discussed our pace and strength and all that sort of stuff that we have in abundance in attack. And even early on in the games, teams just can't cope with it.
At the moment, no, it seems they can't. It's been quite a pleasure. Actually, it's reminded me much of the, the early days of McDermott, where we have really fast starts and win games in the opening half an hour. Clearly Brentford didn't turn up within that first sort of 20 minutes, half an hour. We could have gone 3-0 up. I don't know. Not still this hour. I don't know how Barrow's missed the open goal at 2-0. But, you know, 2-0 up, the same against Preston as well, wasn't it? We went 2-0 up very early on there.
So it's
working. Teams can't handle us in the first 10 or 15 minutes of matches at the moment, certainly at home, and it's standing us in good stead.
Yeah, well, I think ultimately at this stage of the season and being in a relegation battle, you have to have, you know, an asset, and it's kind of too late in the season for teams to be able to work you out, and because perhaps players are focused a bit more on recovery and training, they're thinking more on the fitness side of things rather than spending hours and hours working over drills and everything like that to counter the opposition. So in terms of us having an asset and pushing it and just making sure we're really good at one thing, getting the ball out wide to Mo Barrow and sticking it in towards Yakumete or whoever it is in the middle, It's a good system, and the good thing about it as well is that as fans, it's actually quite entertaining to watch.
It is, yeah. The one thing that we have had throughout this whole period of utterly diabolical form is pace and abundance, and we just haven't utilised it right. And I think now we've got quite a pragmatic manager in charge who's learning all the time. You know, his team set up and the way that we go through and manage games it's different to how we were doing it in January. But the way that we set up to win the ball fairly deep and spring and counter attack, it works to those players, to their abilities. And you look at the way, you know, the first goal was a prime example of that on Saturday, where we won the ball and we quickly got it out to Barrow in acres of space in the centre circle, and just one scything through ball to Mate, who outpaced the defence. That, you know, that using that pace that we've got, finally is starting to reap dividends. And with, you know, all we're doing at the moment is slight improvement on slight improvement on slight improvement. There have been a few rocky performances along the way, but the way that we're going, it stands us in good stead for not just the rest of the season, but, you know, provided Gomez stays and we recruit well in the summer, it's standing us in good stead for next season. And I'm quite positive and optimistic about it, to be honest with you.
It's a nice feeling to be able to say that, because certainly, even though we did survive relegation last season, there wasn't too many people saying, oh, well, this team has the foundations to go on and push on, which we are, as you say, seeing the early signs of that at the moment. Obviously, 2-0 up, it became 2-1. It was a Martinez error, really, a goalkeeping error that allowed Brentford back in the game right at the end of the first half. And it's interesting when you look at this game statistically, because again, we were beaten for shots, 11-15. We lost the possession game, 38-62%. And that says to me, again, it's that pragmatic approach that we've seen managers who like to play the ball around come in before and stick to it and say, you know what, the players are going to have to learn to keep it passing out at the back and play my way or the highway sort of thing. But Gomez is saying, yeah, well, I do want to play out from the back and I do want to keep the ball. But if we're not going to win a game like that, then it is pretty pointless. And yet again, we've won a game at home, having had a significantly less amount of the ball compared to our opponents.
Exactly. And Brentford play a good possession game anyway. They have the ability in their team to cut teams apart. They're a really, really good side. They've been rubbish away. Speaking to Billy Graham both before and after, he's the guy that runs Besotted. And he said that they've been absolutely diabolical away, but at home, they're electric on fire. So they clearly have ability, but even though they got that goal back, which, to be brutally honest with you, I didn't really think they deserved it after their first half performance. Yes, they dominated possession, they dominated territory in the second half, but was I ever really remotely concerned with any of the chances that they were getting? I mean, they had a canvas shot, I think, from an angle which was comfortable for Martinez. Martinez has scrambled across and got his hands to one or two things fairly late on. But I was never unduly concerned, unlike, you know, 3-4 days previous, where again we deliberately sat back in that game, and let's not be, you know, let's be brutally honest and say that if Norwich had walked away with a 3-1, 4-1 victory from that game, nobody would really have batted an eyelid. But we hung in there, rode our luck at times, relied on, who, you know, a guy who is an exceptional keeper, and we can forgive him that mistake on Saturday. Even if it had cost us the game, I think we can, because of the way that he's managed to keep us in games. You know, you remember the save that he made against Villa. He made three or four good, great saves against Norwich. You know, he's kept us in more games than the mistakes that he's made. He's not infallible. You know, he hasn't played a huge number of games. He's only been playing for 2 or 3 months, but by Christ, is he potentially a really, really top class keeper? Let's not be overly positive about it, because yeah, Brentford did have a lot of possession and territory, and we didn't really create much in that second half. But at the same time, defensively, we're becoming increasingly more solid. We are in a position to be able to sit back currently and see out games, and the more we do that, the more occasionally we're going to come unstuck like Rotherham, but it feels more like we're capable of doing that and managing a game situation, and not getting away with it, but you know, deserving of the victory in the end.
Yeah, worth mentioning quickly that Norwich game, because it was, you know, the game before is about just under a week ago now, but it is interesting that you say that we kind of hung on for a large respect, and it certainly wasn't Timu Pukki's night. He's been, you know, the Championship's best player this season, and he could not hit the back of the net, you know, if he'd have played for another 3 hours at Carrow Road. But the way that we went and stole the point there, I think, was, you know, I think a neutral might describe it as a bit lucky, but compared to Brentford and Preston, the scorelines there, the fact that we've only won by one goal, do you think in a sense that is a little bit harsh on Reading? Did we actually deserve in either of those games to win by a couple goals? Maybe, you know, if we take our chances a little bit better, defend a little bit better, that we managed to do that?
I think against Brentford, ultimately, we should have been 3 or 4 goals up at half time. So nobody would have, again, like I said earlier, nobody would have batted an eyelid that we We stole a point at Norwich in the end, but again, nobody would have batted an eyelid if we'd have won that game on the weekend by 3 or 4 goals. I think it was a little bit unlucky in some ways, but you can't take every single chance that you create. So against Preston, I felt, 2-0 was a fair reflection of the game. They obviously got the one back right at the end. It is what it is. I would like us to see us be more ruthless. I would like us to create more chances particularly in the first half of games, when we go for teams, and do much more. And again, I alluded earlier to how McDermott's side played in the early years, where I can recall us going 3-0 up against Coventry in the first half. We went, I think Sheffield Wednesday, we beat 5-0. Peterborough, we were 4-0 up, I think, at half time. these teams that we're playing as equal peers, but absolutely blowing them out of the water. I'd like to see us a bit more like that, a bit more free flowing, a bit more progressive in attack. If there's one criticism that I could label at Gomez, is that at times he is a bit too pragmatic. Sitting on one goal and two goal leads, to an extent, yes, we did sit back on Saturday. We certainly sat back against Norwich. We weren't necessarily pressed back. We conceded a lot of possession and territory to them. Same can be said for Rotherham. As I said earlier, we came unstuck against them. We sat back on that one goal lead, got it wrong. There's one criticism that I could label him. It's purely that, but at the moment, we're playing well enough, certainly defensively, to have more than a good opportunity of seeing out games. And so while it's working, I'm fairly content.
Well, let's hear from Jose Gomez himself and hear his post-match comments then before we come back and just have a little look at where the entire relegation scene is at the moment.
I might be for the 3 points. I'm not happy for the way that in the last minutes we suffer, but it's championship and this can happen. I'm happy for the brave way that my players fight again, and the brave way that they keep the 3 points in our pocket. But it's a few hours to stay together, and after we start working again in the next game. So very important 3 points for our war, for our to achieve to our target. So I think was very important. I'm sure that it's very important the support of our fans again at home. After Swansea game, we draw 3 times. We won, I think, 5. And we lost against Leeds, and these results are also the result of the support of our fans. I think it's not I can use this expression. They are building a strong bond in our stadium.
So the status is 4 points clear, and we have a 10 better goal difference than Rotherham. It is now a case of, QPR, 8 points clear now after they won, so it's pretty much a case of one from five teams, if you want to throw Birmingham in as well. But as you get to this stage of the season, QPR have only lost one of their last three, as have ourselves, as have Wigan, as have Rotherham. Millwall and Birmingham haven't lost any of their last three, so everyone is picking up points. This really is a stage of season where, as I've said for a few weeks now, the mid-table teams are the exact teams you want to play. Preston, Forest, you get Blackburn in a bit of dodgy form as well, Sheffield Wednesday. These are the teams that you can pick up points against, because ultimately their season is over. But when it comes to where Reading are in the relegation picture at the moment, the comfort that I get is from the fact that, yes, 4 points, you can obviously lose that in 2 weeks relatively quickly without, even putting in some bad performances yourself against good teams. But we've got Millwall and Wigan between us and the drop zone now, and I find that so much more comfortable when the chances of, obviously, one team picking up points is relatively high, but the chances of two or three every weekend that you don't, I think that is going to be a massive benefit for Reading going into the end of the season.
I think you're absolutely right. And also what you've got to also look at is the fixtures that both, particularly Reading and Rotherham, have got. And you look at the fixtures they've got, they play three of the same opponents that we've got. The only thing, they play Swansea at home on Friday, Birmingham away on Monday, West Brom away on the 27th, and Middlesbrough at home on the last day of the season. Compared to us, we obviously play Bristol City, West Brom, Middlesbrough and Birmingham. When you compare those two fixtures, at least, and not even taking Wigan and Millwall into the equation, who play each other on the last day of the season, it is feasible that we could easily be safe by Birmingham. But you just can't see from those four fixtures Rotherham getting the 5 points on us that they need to take us right down there. And even then, as I say, you've got that comfort fixture for us at the end between Wigan and Millwall, and they will. You're looking at their fixtures. Wigan have got Leeds away, Preston at home, with local derby pride at stake. Birmingham away, and then of course Millwall. While Millwall have got Brentford. All right, you know, we know what Brentford are like away. We've just seen them. Villa away, who are flying at the moment. Stoke at home. They've also got to play Bristol City away. And then, which is their game in hand, and then obviously play Wigan away. So you've got that comfort of that last fixture, plus the fact that all three other teams have got tough fixtures also to play as well as us. And so when it comes to Rotherham, who are in that last place, I can't see them getting that extra 5 points that they need to drop us down there. I think one win for us does it. Who we get that against? Well, who cares who we get it against, as long as we get it? Because one win means it's 4 points with nine to play. Ultimately, you need a nine point swing in terms of the 5 points that Rotherham need, and we need to drop 4 points. Rotherham they look to be safe, but then of course, like I say, Wigan and Millwall are in there. I can't see it personally. I'm not taking anything for granted. Football's a funny old game. But, yeah, I think provided we keep doing what we're doing and playing to the level that we are, I think we'll be OK. We'll pick up the points required and then into the summer and progress for next season and see what happens.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? Is it that one win, you say you don't care who it comes against. I am fearful at the moment with the fixtures we have coming up, the fact we play 4th, 6th and 7th. That if it comes against Birmingham, great, but going into that game, knowing you have to win against Birmingham, perhaps even being back in the relegation zone as for that last game of the season, I think it becomes a whole different ball game then, particularly if Birmingham are safe, or, you know, even if it could be a case of us or them on their last game of the season. It's the Championship, as you say, can't rule anything out. But, yeah, I think ultimately with the way we're playing at the moment, go into Bristol City and Middlesbrough, as we'll discuss a bit later. Bristol City at home are not great. Middlesbrough aren't great at the moment either. West Brom, you know, it's anything can happen in that sort of game. That's going to be a very interesting clash next Monday. So I think we're going to win one of those games. And I think we're probably, you know, if we don't win, I think we'll pick up a couple of points. And that should hopefully mean that it's a relatively comfortable final day. So let's see how that goes. Quick word before we jump into pub chat then, because I know Handbags has a matter close to his heart that we're going to discuss in pub chat. But quickly before we do that, the Reading women's team, their FA Cup semi-final ended in defeat on the weekend. Just wanted to say that it was a fantastic effort, but nonetheless going out on penalties in the FA Cup semi-final, having missed a penalty during the game, which finished 1-1, probably had the better of the chances as well. It's good to know that the women's team, you know, a bit of a Schadenfreude humour, but are ultimately very much a Reading team in that they get to the semi-finals and can't quite get their foot over the line despite being the better team on the pitch. So hopefully they'll be up and going again, and you know, next season they'll hopefully be doing a bit better in the league and once again have another cup run. But huge feat for them to go as far as they did, and ultimately the penalty shootout, as it was a bit of a strange one to watch as a spectator, but, you know, ultimately the result was the thing that matters. Reading out of the FA Cup semi-finals, which we've heard before, but we can always be proud of that achievement. Speaking of achievements we can be proud of, let's move into pub chat and talk about this thing called Club 1871.
What's that all about then?
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at The Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/The Tarlhurst End.
Well, handbags, let's discuss Club 1871 then. It is, well, for those who haven't been to the Day Ski, perhaps if you live abroad or you know, it's been a long time, you haven't been able to get down this season, it is the South Stand, obviously, where the away fans usually go. It's typically, you know, Leeds or Villa, someone come down. It's 4,000 away fans, but this season it's been chopped in half and the club have sacrificed that sort of guaranteed income that they get from the away fans and said, let's stick some home fans in there. It was a fan-led initiative that has been there as primarily atmosphere-based, you know, singing and chanting all the way through the game and backing the team. And I must admit that, you know, generally watching as a fan, it had its critics as it began. I've sat there a few times early in the season and I thought it looked a bit flat. But really, these past few weeks, it has kicked on just in exactly the way we all wanted to see. And Club 1871 had, you know, hundreds of people in it for the last few weeks, creating a great atmosphere. And what's your sort of overview then for how it's progressed over the season?
Well, clearly, for 2/3 of the season, it wasn't going the way that we really wanted it to. Certainly at the start of the season, I mean, let's be brutally honest, there were, you know, two or three of us, there's half a dozen of us who are all involved in the in sort of setting it up and kicking it all off. We went into it really quite naively, thinking, yeah, people would just, you know, generally migrate. And clearly, it didn't work out the way we wanted it to. And it got to the point towards the end of February where the club were looking at us and thinking, and got us together and said, right, okay, you know, here's your specific target. This is what we need you to do. For us to, you know, seriously consider this to go ahead next season, gave us the target. Clearly we needed to get more people in there. You know, we were averaging less than 200 at one point. But certainly since Wigan, yes, all right, there was the incentive of free beer. But we knew, we just knew that once we got people in there, just to try it once, we had this gut instinct that people would start to realise, actually, this is a force for good. And yes, it still has its detractors. It still has people who don't like it. But then every club that's done this, it still has people who don't like that kind of thing. So, hey, you know, we took a lot of flack for a lot of the season. But once we got people in there for the Wigan game, and yes, all right, again, it also helped the type of game that it was with the last minute winner, from Yaku Mata, on what was actually quite a poor performance, all told. We showed what we wanted to sort of create. We're certainly not, you know, doing this for the for self gratification and glorification. What we wanted to do was give the players something to play for, and not actually, you know, ultimately give them an excuse. You know, oh yeah, it's such a flat atmosphere. As far as we're concerned, we're all on the same hymn sheet, where we didn't want to give the players any excuses. You know, if they're playing in a flat atmosphere, it's difficult for them to get themselves motivated, ready for the game. And we saw that with the type of performances that we got, certainly at the back end of Yapstam and certainly earlier this season when it all started going tits up. But since Gomez has taken charge, clearly he's tried to galvanize the fans, he's galvanized the players. The players are playing for him. And what's really wonderful to see is the way the loan players have taken to the club. They understand what we're trying to do. And improve the atmosphere. You know, once you start improving an atmosphere, it becomes a lot easier to play. And as Yaku Mata said today, of course, said at the weekend, comments I think were released today, it makes it easier for a player to play with confidence when you've got that backing throughout the 90 minutes. Long and short of it is, yes, it didn't go the way that we wanted it to for 2/3 of the season, but certainly since Wigan, against Preston, against Brentford, against Leeds. We didn't have quite so many in there against Leeds, but, you know, Tuesday night game and whatnot. It's started to gain some traction. And we can only thank Heineken enough for that, for laying on the two beers against Wigan. Because as I said earlier, we really wanted was to just get people in there just once. to get them to experience it. And it's started to snowball a bit by now. And what we really want is four figures in there for either for West Brom or Birmingham. And if we get four figures in there for Birmingham, then, you know, we'll be made up. Absolutely made up, because we had 800 and odd something in there against Brentford. I think we had 700 in there for PNE, 760 odd. We had 700 odds for the Wigan game. So, you know, the weekend was the highest that we've ever had. Long may it continue, really.
For me, the word that you mentioned there that is most pertinent is snowball, and these sort of things, you know, it is difficult at a football game. I've had it in the northeast before when you want to have an atmosphere going, but it's, you know, human nature to stop yourself from embarrassment jumping up and being the one who does it, and it's very difficult to you know, actually get these things started, and it is a sort of crowd mentality and everything that you need behind it, and that's what it's developed in these past few weeks, and it's obviously got an identity that fans are buying into, which is very nice. And generally speaking, I think everyone, you know, everyone at the ground wants the same thing. Everyone wants an atmosphere that's going to drive the players on. They might not want to necessarily be part of it. They might want to watch it as opposed to, you know, be in the thick of it. And that's absolutely fine as well. But it's getting there. And I think that I've seen there's talk of moving the position of the fans on the stands, whether they're going to be at the front or the back.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what do you think will, in terms of changes, if presuming it is there next season or for the last few weeks of the season, what sort of changes do you think are going to be or are in discussion at the moment?
Well, again, we're going to review it at the end of the season with the club. I mean, without dwelling on this, there have been a few unsavoury incidents in there this season, which haven't really helped the cause. But so there'll be some, you know, a degree of planning around sort of flashpoint areas, and I think it's fair to say that kind of played into the positioning at the weekend. But you know, ultimately, if we get 1800, which we're not necessarily expecting at the moment, I mean, but you know, if we get 1800 fans in there, then you know, positioning of the fans doesn't really matter because we'll have filled it out. Not forget that it is unreserved seating, and so we automatically lose 10% of capacity for that to accommodate that. So when it comes to future plans and what's going to happen, yeah, you know, we're going to review it at the end of the season with all the relevant stakeholders involved, the money men, the safety guys, the supporter representative Rob and Jackie, and go from there. But at the moment, the way that it's going, and you know what we see on social media with people promising to move their season tickets there next season, it's looking to be really quite promising.
Well, we had a tweet out about this just to get people's sort of general thoughts and opinions on it, and then any questions they had on Club 1871. The PFJ saying, "I've waited 20 years for this. At last, I can stand and sing and feel like I'm part of the club again. Better than the South Bank." And Max Forster asking, "How many people do you think will be in Club 1871 next season?" Which we've kind of gone into. What that other question or the other thought mentioned there is the "At last I can stand and sing," which I know at Tottenham's new stadium, they've actually begun handing out bands to fans who have been standing too much. And it kind of contrasts with the whole idea of this Tottenham wall and everything that they've built that entire, you know, tier behind the goal to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes up again in the Club 1871 in terms of the standing versus sitting sort of debate. How has it been in there as a fan in terms of, you know, people generally obviously standing up, in terms of the stewards, in terms of the club, and obviously officially they are a non, you know, it's a seated arena, etc. Unofficially, do you think that there has been a sort of lenient look towards it to benefit it in helping fans stand rather than sit?
I think the long and short of it is, if everybody stands, and we find this with an away contingent, if everybody stands, if you have 2,000 people standing, then what are the safety guys going to be able to do? And the vast majority of people in that end stand. Yes, there's been clearly there's been a lenient approach towards it, but look, it's it is what it is. If people stand, then the stewards are ultimately going to be powerless to stop it. And we're not there to be deliberately obstructive or obtrusive. If we're allowed to stand, we'll stand. You know, the vast majority of people in there want to stand. And so it seems as though that the club have been very, very lenient towards that. So, yeah, at the same time, it's absolutely no different, really. And bearing in mind that I'm, traditionally a Y25er, sat at the back of Y20, or stood at the back of Y25. Yes, we had some issues with persistent standing or perception of persistent standing up until about 2010, when suddenly the club relaxed. We didn't have those issues from about that time onwards. So there's no difference, really, from my perspective, in terms of standing, persistent standing, but the middle to the back of Y25 to what there is, the middle to the back of Club 1871. So, it is what it is. If you want to stand, then it seems to me to be that, the club are going to let you do that, provided you do it, relatively sensibly, i.e. don't stand right at the front and block everybody's view, basically.
I suppose it goes without saying that the advent of safe standing and rail seating is, ultimately in clubs like Reading, you would have to ask the question, where is it going to go if it gets brought in? And for once, I think there is a kind of natural answer to that. And putting it in half of the south stand would, make a reasonable amount of sense if Club 1871 continues to the point when it pretty much inevitably comes into law. So that's something that, it answers a bit of a question in that sense. As an onlooker that's seen it grow and had my doubts early on in the season just about the atmosphere sense of it and seeing how it's improved, it is really good to see that it's kicking on. And we'll kick on with the show then and move into the next section, which is the mailbag.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Right, David Spencer kicks us off then with his message on Twitter saying, feeling positive about the last four games, with us mid-table in the form league, but Rotherham play three of the same sides as us, so West Brom, Birmingham and Borough will have something to say about our future, while Wigan versus Millwall is on the final day. Huge Easter weekend, could see us safe, come on you Ars. And that is it's something we discussed earlier, isn't it? Those the coinciding of the fixture list. It's like the very early days of the FIFA video games, when it basically the fixture list was just teams following each other around the country, basically. And yeah. And it seems quite low tech in a sense that we're playing three of the same teams, but I'm not mad about it. And, we discussed it a bit, but what I do want to highlight is that the form table has us, it's had us for a while now, right in the, 13th at the moment for the last six games, two wins, two draws, two defeats. But also you have Rotherham 15th, Wigan 16th in the, it's the team, it's Birmingham and QPR are the two lowest teams threatened with in this battle that we're in at the moment. Millwall are 12th, they've got the same form as us.
Yeah.
It comes
That QPR result of the weekend was an irritating one because they were bottom of the form league, weren't they?
Yeah, On
Wednesday, I think they were still 50-1 to be relegated. And, well, clearly the results on Wednesday and Saturday have obliterated those odds. But yeah, it would have been nice to have dragged another team back into it. I think Birmingham are relatively safe now.
The thing with Birmingham is that they're on bad form. And if, every defeat that they have pretty much between now and the end of the season is a six-pointer that gifts another team. I think it's Rotherham, ourselves, and the other team they face around us. It gives them a huge, a massive blow in terms of their ability to stay out of the trouble zone.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, who have they got to play on the last day of the season? It's a fair point. I just think that they've got, they were clearly mid-table before that 9-point deduction. They were mid-table-ish, upper mid-table. And they've clearly shown throughout the season they've got enough to steer well clear of it. Like I said earlier, football's a funny old game. And who knows, what could happen in those next three games leading into that last game of the season. Put it this way. If I were a Birmingham fan, I wouldn't want to be going to our gaff, given the home form that we've displayed in the second half of this season, knowing that we need 3 points, given that it's only Swansea and Leeds that have beaten us in 2019 at home. Who knows what's going to happen? but my gut feeling is that they're safe. Even if not, I think they've got too much of a cushion there now.
Ultimately, yeah, they've got Derby at home, which is a very difficult game. But then, yeah, Rotherham, Wigan, and that Wigan game at home, you think that that's... if they do lose to Rotherham, Wigan and us, then quite frankly, they deserve to go down. So we'll have to see how that one pans out. But Daniel asks, in the other question in our relatively short mailbag this week, is how many of the loan players can we realistically sign? And, well, it's funny, as I was thinking about saying the five loan players, but of course the six loan players that Reading have in the club at the moment. Saïda Zaatalahi, we were pondering recently where he's got up to, but he's played for the under-23 team recently.
Yeah.
So he's back-ish. Whether he's got a future, who knows? But he's back on the pitch, and you know, if he's around and Gomez rates him, then I expect he'll play him. So there's Saïda Zaatalahi, and then, of course, Nelson Oliveira, Ovi Ejaria, Matt Miazga, Emiliano Martinez, and Lewis Baker. Of those, the first name that I'll bring out is Baker, who, to be honest, if Chelsea's transfer system continues as it has done for the past decade, he'll be going out on loan to a championship team again next season, and I don't see why it couldn't be us.
Well, quite. But then again, you know, Chelsea do have a habit of letting players go that clearly aren't going to make the grade there. They're like John Swift, like Josh McEachran. I want to say Lucas Piazon, but I'm not sure where he is. I think is he in Germany at the moment, somewhere like that?
I'm pretty sure he's still signed to Chelsea somehow
or other. But yeah, you know, Lewis Baker, as good a player as he is, I can't see making the grade at Chelsea. There are very few players anyway that make the grade from their academy. You've only got to take a look at what's happening to the likes of Hudson-Odoi there, who is an exceptional talent and has barely had any game time. He certainly doesn't get the amount of game time that he deserves. So, you know, Baker, the best thing Lewis Baker can do at this stage of his career is leave and leave permanently. So I think, you know, why wouldn't he come to us? Provided, you know, obviously, there are more factors at play than just a player wanting to come and play for us. Obviously, finances take their toll, and we're perilously close to FFP, sort of breaching FFP. But provided we can get rid of some of that, some of the deadwood that we're carrying permanently in the summer, and certainly looking at getting rid of some of the players that were frozen out in the winter. Then hopefully there'll be a little bit of money to spare, provided, of course, that we stay in the division. You know, that's obviously not a given at the moment. And there's no reason why Lewis Baker wouldn't or shouldn't sign for us. You know, he's clearly bought into the Jose Gomez way of thinking and playing. He's bought into the culture of the club. He's obviously popular. So, you know, and the same goes for Ejaria as well, who actually, you know, My first time I saw him was Blackburn, and I wasn't massively impressed in that particular match.
No,
but it wasn't,
I wasn't either, actually.
Anyway, but since then, he's got that, you know, he's one of those players who just seems to have go-go gadget legs where they just extend, you know, wherever the ball is. And he's just got this one. He's one of these players that I hated playing against when I played, where they just have that insane habit of, no matter what the situation, just walk away with the ball. No matter what you've done to try and win it and come away with it. And he's one of those players, and his touch is exceptional as well. He's also very skillful. He's deceptive with that. He's very, I want to say, Kanu-esque, Nwankwo Kanu-esque.
I was thinking Dave Kitson, actually. As you were saying, that sort of extendo legs, that's how Dave Kitson scored most of his goals in his first couple of seasons for Reading.
Yeah, I can see that comparison as well. So I think Ejaria, if Liverpool would be willing to let him go, I think, you know, with you know, the amount of game time that he's had, he's only improved. Likewise, Lewis Baker is it kind of follows on with the way that the team has played. We're only improving, really, with our, not necessarily in our outright, you know, on the ball play, but the unit play, defensive play, transition play, attacking play. It's, you know, the more soft skills that you need, you know, to become a good player, to become a good team. So, you know, Ejaria's improvement, Baker's improvement, obviously Oliveira, has had his injury problems, two of them clearly. But you know, he's come back and he's getting stronger. Could we, apparently by all accounts, we have a figure agreed with Norwich for him. That would be interesting to see what happens in the summer. But you know, clearly he's a very, very popular player here as a loan player. One player who, sadly, as much as I'd love to sign him, because I put on Twitter in on Saturday night, I think that at this moment in time, I rate him as one of the top three goalkeepers that we've ever had, or certainly that I've ever seen play for Reading, should I say. Emiliano Martinez, I don't think, regrettably, we have a hope in hell of signing, because he's just too good for us. Yeah. He's too good. He's a Premier League goalkeeper.
And ultimately, if Arsenal don't make him their number two, or even if they try and make him a number two and he decides that that's not what he wants, I think a team better than us will know about him and will come in and sign him.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, Leeds look like they're going to be going up. I wouldn't be surprised if he went to one of the promoted clubs like Leeds, or certainly one of the fair to middling clubs in the Premier League, like, say, a Watford or a Bournemouth or someone like that. Yeah, he is an exceptional talent. And with game time, he will only get better.
Yeah, I agree on that. And yeah, I think the same for Matt Miazga, ultimately. If you're looking at a player who teams are going to know about, and teams around Europe, he's gone on loan to France and places like that before, teams around Europe bigger than us, I think, are likely to come in for him in the summer. If he doesn't have a Chelsea future, Baker, you say about, I seem to remember he was put on a very big contract quite young that he might well still be on in terms of wage, and that might play a part. But, you know, ultimately, I don't think many teams are going to offer him that sort of money again. And, yeah, Rajaria is definitely someone I think can be kept on. I don't think Liverpool will necessarily need him more than anything. The thing is with Oliveira, he's still 27, so he's had the injury problem, so he's still in and around the prime of his career, as it were. And then he's not quite done well enough to... He's done well enough, you know, we've seen the glimpses of him that's worth keeping, but he's not quite done well enough for if Norwich do, and, you know, if and when they go up and they want to get shot of him, they're not going to be saying, oh, well, we've got so many bids for him that, you know, if Reading come in with a cheeky low offer that we haven't agreed yet, I don't think they'd be put off by that. I think they might well take it, depending on all the sort of, you know, technicalities and whatnot that we don't know about.
Yeah, you could argue that, but then, as I say, I'm fairly sure that we've agreed a fee with them. I think that, you know, it was clearly a tactical move to sign loan players in the summer because our position was so perilous.
Yeah.
So you know, who knows what we've agreed with the other clubs. Martinez clearly has been, you know, has been saying to, well, he had the interview with Charles Watts recently, saying that, you know, he wants game time. He doesn't want to be sat on the bench. So, you know, who knows what might happen if he does sign, then sign for us in the summer, then hey, happy days. Just going back to Matt Miazga though, you mentioned that, you know, you saw him as very much in the Martinez sort of mold. Yes, he's an exceptional defender, clearly. I actually think we might have a chance of signing him as well, to be honest with you, because he seems to have formed a very, very strong bond with Liam Moore. Again, he's one of those players that has bought into the culture of the club, bought into what Jose Gomez wants to do. And again, he's popular with the supporters. Of course, the move's got to be right for him. But, you know, in terms of his own personal deal, but, you know, personally, I'm of the opinion that we if we wanted to sign him permanently, then I think we'd have a good shout.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think ultimately when it comes to dealing with Chelsea, it is a very difficult, very different sort of sense that I get the feeling teams have to deal with, in terms of they, you know, their set of 60, whatever number it is, of loan players that they like to get out. I think they probably do have quite a big plan for and like to know how much money they can get for him, like to know what sort of place they can place him to get that. And, you know, who knows, maybe it is Reading, but they've sent him out on loan abroad before. They might well do it again. It's one of those that, you know, if, as you say, if he comes back, absolute happy days. But if he doesn't, then I think depending on where he does go, I think we probably wouldn't feel too hard done by, because we've been able to enjoy these players for the second half of the season. And so far, they are keeping us up. And that is ultimately much more important than anything else this season. So let's think about where we are next as we go into the last four games and preview Bristol City on Good Friday.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Any other business?
that then. It's a bit of an odd kickoff time for Bristol City versus Reading. It's noon, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, handbags, but we're kicking off at noon. It's not on TV or anything like that. We're just the team that kicks off at noon on Good Friday. So 12 o'clock kickoff, Bristol City Reading. And ultimately, the thing to say about Bristol City going into this game is that home form is just not their forte. They're 14th in the league when it comes to home form, 1 win in 5. They've not kept a home clean sheet since February the 2nd. There's not been a home clean sheet in any of their games since then. So lots of goals going into their games. A very good team. They're in and around the playoffs for a reason, but they are there to be got at.
They certainly are. And their home form, certainly recently, leads to a good degree of positivity. But of course, you know, let's also look at our away form. We have only won twice away all season. all right, we came very, very close to getting the third win on Wednesday night. But, you know, as I said earlier, we're improving. While they are, I won't say they look. Let's be not beat around the bush. They're a good side. They're not in the playoff fixture for no reason. But no, you're absolutely right. They're very streaky. Certainly, Lee Johnson teams have always been rather streaky. And we have a reasonable record at Ashton Gate as well. You know, I'm one for always looking at sort of historical results and how we do at places. One thing I do know is that we've only ever had one 0-0 draw against Bristol City, and we played them nearly 100 times in our history. So it's usually one for the both teams to score accumulator. They've only scored 55 goals as well all season. So they don't score many. So if we can, you know, notch first and hold them out, well, clearly if we notch first and hold them out, then we'll win the game. But if we can notch first and then defend like we've done over the last couple of matches, then I won't say it'll be a comfortable victory, but it'll be a very, very, very welcome victory, and one that I think is well within our grasp. But, you know, let's not ignore the fact that our away form this season has been far from spectacular. And so most betting companies would almost have this as a very their odds would favour a home win quite strongly.
Well, there's an interesting stat about our away form, and that, but I think especially since Gomez has come in, this has been certainly the case that only Stoke and Nottingham Forest have drawn more away games than us. Only Bolton, Ipswich and Rotherham have scored less than us on the road. So over the course of the season, I think, you know, the amount of times we've gone away and just sort of dragged our heels and lost 1-0 or 2-1 or something is, I can't think of how many times it's happened. And under Gomez, we've gone away and drawn 0-0 quite a few times. And I think that's held its merits. And ultimately, it's been a case of away from home with Gomez. It's been stopping turning the tide, and ultimately stopping the tide has been enough so far to get us as far away from relegation zone as we have. But turning it back and getting those wins at the moment, it feels almost like a project for next season, particularly with the fact that we're playing two promotion chasing teams to finish the season.
In fact, you could argue three, actually, because we've got Middlesbrough as well, who is seventh. Look, I can't argue with any of that. Whatever happens, it's going to be a difficult away game. Regardless of the amount of goals that they've scored, we've scored draws or whatever, they're sixth. They're sixth for a reason. They've got 65 points. They've won 18 games this season. 18, 11, 12 is their record. They've won as many as we've lost. And they're on its own tells its own story. So it's going to be difficult. You know, they're a good side. They don't have any hugely standout players, but you know, as we know full well to our advantage back in 2012, you don't necessarily need standout players to do well in this division. All you need is a good cohesive unit that can either grind out results or in some cases win comfortably. But either way, it's going to be difficult. but you know, we've got minimum 1,500. I think we're going to take maybe 2,500 for it.
Yeah, it's extended the ticket allocation.
So with a good away contingent, who knows what's going to happen. And hopefully they get behind. Well, clearly they will get behind them, given what's been going on over the last few weeks.
It's funny you mentioned the sort of team ethic they have. In fact, their last seven different goals, or last seven goals, have been scored by seven different goal scorers, and that is that just shows, you know, that's a healthy spread. I think if you can rely on seven different players to pop up and score for you, that is not bad at all. And let's talk about, to round off the show then, the prediction league, because, you know, when Reading win at home, you suspect that everyone's going to cash in and get some points on that. And you know, I think this is the first time this season where that's pretty much been the case. Only Wim and Wim and Westy had draws going into this game, and everyone else had wins. So we all kind of cashed in a little bit. Ollie Allen and Johnny Williams were both bang on. Yourself, Handbags, you had a win. So the current state of affairs in the sort of, you know, it's two tables in this at the moment. Ollie on 33, Johnny 32, yourself 32, and Wim on 29. Myself and Simeon Pickup both had the win with Tom Crocker bang on. So the best of the rest, as I'm putting it, because I'm leading it, is myself on 21 points, Tom and Sim on 20 points, and Westy, last year's winner, back on 19 this season. So you're right in it again, Handbags, and this is your chance to get the first prediction in.
Chance to reclaim my crown after winning it in 16-17. yeah, do you know what? I could have really done without that equaliser, couldn't I, on Wednesday, given that I predicted a defeat and got that extra point. But yeah, cheers, Andy. Thanks for that. God, where do we go with this? Do you know what? Let's go. I don't want to go too negative. I'm not going to go too positive. So, you know where I'm going to go. I'm going to sit on the fence and go for a 2-2 draw.
Yeah, plenty of goals in that. That's interesting. You know, to be fair, I annoyingly, when I first was setting up the podcast for the before the Brentford game, I said 2-1 to Reading and changed that last minute to 1-0. So whatever I go with this time, I'm not going to move away from it. I'm just going to have to go with a 2-1 defeat, purely on the basis that this is ultimately, you know, Bristol City are in good form, even if home form isn't what they're doing well in at the moment. And we don't, you know, we are doing well. We are mid-table in our form, so we're not doing spectacularly well. But these sort of games, they're not do or die quite at the moment. Maybe looking back on, you know, the end of the season, we'll regret a defeat here or there. But at the moment, I think a 2-1 defeat sounds pretty realistic in my eyes, and also it won't ruin our season, hopefully won't anyway. And, you know, on the weekend, as we play just before Birmingham host Derby, as we've said. Rotherham go to Swansea, which is a difficult game. Wigan go to Leeds, which is a difficult game. Millwall hosting Brentford, which probably won't be too difficult as games go. And ultimately, no matter what happens after Friday's games, we will still be outside the relegation zone. So we will have Ollie back with the weekend preview. He's reckoning he's going to do a show on Sunday, reviewing the Friday game at Bristol and giving a bit of a preview to West Brom, which is on Monday. Of course, we're back at the Madstad on Easter Monday, 3 o'clock kickoff against West Brom. I'll get your prediction for that a little bit later, Handbags, because we always like to see how Reading fare at Bristol City before we do that, because, you know, if we get seven injuries, then who knows what we're going to be predicting for West Brom. But a busy weekend ahead of us, and thank you for joining me this evening, Handbags, to discuss all things Reading.
Absolutely, always a pleasure, never a chore.
And we shall be back, plan is, next Monday, after the West Brom game. We've got two games now. The Easter weekend, two promotion-chasing teams against one relegation-fighting team. It's the Championship. Everything's to play for. Every game is potentially a win. And as we saw on Wednesday, even the teams that are destined for better things can be held back by a little old Reading. And let's hope that we can do that a couple more times to ensure our Championship status for next season once again. Come on, you arse.
You smile, funny how the crowns always be.